This is Leader ReadyCast, a monthly podcast featuring real-world lessons, best practices, and action-oriented insights for the you're-it moments when you're called upon to lead. Leader ReadyCast is the official podcast of the National Preparedness Leadership Initiative, a joint program of the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health and the Center for Public Leadership at the Harvard John F. Kennedy School of Government. Subscribe to Leader ReadyCast wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Change is in the air. I can't recall a recent time when I've spoken to a leader who isn't grappling with change in some form. Some of it's been forced by persistent talent shortages or other factors. Some of it's in the self-initiated recognition of changing operational considerations. I spoke to someone recently who just had their senior leader announce a major strategic change without telling anybody. Just sort of popped onto the screen, and now you got to deal with it. So no matter what the source, one of the consistent challenges I hear about is engaging employees so that they're enthusiastically on board for the journey. Change is tough, and you got to bring people along with you. In the MPLI's transformational change model, the first step is strengthening leadership. But another crucial step is really engaging the organization, doing change with them, not to them. So not just a town hall, but really helping people co-create the future. Throughout each step, communication is key. And that's why I've invited an expert in internal communications and change strategy to join me for this episode. Mark Dollins is founder and president of North Star Communications. He has more than 30 years of experience with organizations such as DuPont, PepsiCo, the Quaker Oats Company, and the Northern Indiana Public Service Company. In January, he was named one of Fortune's Time Magazine's 10 most influential leaders in PR and communications for 2024. He's the co-author, along with John Stemmel, of the book Engaging Employees Through Strategic Communication, Skills, Strategies, and Tactics. He's also certified in PROCE Change Management and is an adjunct professor at the Missouri School of Journalism at the University of Missouri. Mark and I know each other through our participation on the Leadership Communications Council at the Darden School of Business at the University of Virginia. So we got Mizzou, UVA, Harvard, we got three universities into one podcast. I think that's a record. In this episode, Mark and I will dive into how to frame your thinking around strategy for change and then how to execute so you can gain the commitment of employees as you move forward. He's sharing his own views, not those of Harvard University. Mark, welcome to Leader ReadyCast.
Oh, thanks so much for the invitation, Eric. It's always great to have a conversation with you.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it very much. So, from a communicator's perspective, what are the one or two foundational steps to getting change right? I mean, I've heard it reported that something like 70% or even more of transformation efforts fail. How can the right communication strategy increase the odds of success?
Yeah, 70% if everybody's being honest. I actually think it could be more than that. But I think it starts, Eric, with understanding the discipline of managing change, because by its very nature, change management is about the human side of change, right? We're great at coming up with ideas to drive growth. You know, here's the thing we're changing, now go do it. It doesn't work that way, as you already said. We are not machines. We create meaning and context. And it means more often than not that we have to address the question, what's in this change for me, right? The employee. And in order to deliver that, we have to understand what makes for successful change management, and that's a discipline. You know, there's lots of models that are out there, and the one that I'm certified, as you mentioned, is pretty well known, called PROCI. And it's fundamentally anchored in the concept of what they call ADCAR, so that's an acronym. A is for awareness, D is for desire, K is for knowledge, the second A is for ability, and then the R is for reinforcement. When you think about it, communications runs through every single one of those concepts, creating awareness, desire, knowledge, ability, and reinforcement. So understanding the principles and the discipline of change management is step one. The second one, and we'll talk a little bit more about this if we've got time, is to have a clear and a compelling story to tell, right? What does success look like if we're good at doing this change, right? And leaders need to tell it early. They need to tell it often. And they need to connect every decision, every change initiative, every action to that compelling narrative, right? And they have to make sure that employees see themselves in the story and that where possible, as you've indicated, they have a voice in shaping that change. And so instead of do this, it's how do you think we could do this? You know, in our haste and our speed, we often miss the biggest opportunities to make change work. and make it stick. But these are ways of making sure that you're bringing your team members, your employees along with you.
You've mentioned storytelling skills, and I know, like many great communicators, you rely on them heavily. Help our listeners understand why stories matter and how to tell better ones.
Yeah, well, let me start with a little scientific explanation, and then I'll tie it to leading change. Dr. Norm Holland, I might add, he's at MIT and a Harvard graduate, did a lot of research at the University of Florida in neuropsychology. And he really spent a lot of time looking into the limbic system of the brain and its connection to intaking literature. The limbic system, for those of you, it may have been a while since you took your biology class. That's the part of the brain where we sense and we feel. And we have those aha moments. You know, we cry when Old Yeller or E.T. is near death, and we cheer for Rudy. It touches us, right? And when we say the words, "I want to tell you a story," Dr. Holland basically came up to the conclusion that the neurons in our brain start firing like crazy. We're not going to hear a collection of numbers and facts, but we're going to hear a compelling narrative with meaning. It's going to have a hero and a catalyst and an anti-hero and a conflict and resolution and moral to a story. So let's temporarily share this idea of what a story can do to us as human beings, the science, if you will, behind it. And let's talk about change and how humans react to significant change, because they're both connected. So I think probably a lot of folks are familiar with the Kubler-Ross curve that shows how humans react to significant change or loss. Organizations can basically be both of those things, right? So we can have, as we're going through change, either have significant adjustments to employees' activities or their daily lives, or they can sense loss, right? Doing the things that they like to do, the way that they thought it's always worked well for them. And as humans, we go through the stage of shock and denial, and we get frustrated. Often that leads to some sort of depression. And then eventually, if we do it right, we're going to be looking into experimentation. Well, maybe I'll give this change a chance. I'll try something. And then finally, there's a decision. I'm going to be with this change, or I'm going to opt out. And then finally, this whole idea of integration. I'm going to be putting the change into my daily work. So, Eric, if we think about the most large-scale change initiatives, leaders have to think about bringing others along with them. They have to think about, and they have to help employees through those stages of loss and change. And a clear tool to help them do that is this compelling change narrative. It's one that shows employees they're the heroes of the stories, and it clearly shows what's in it for them, and it gives them a voice in the change and equips them with what they need. Not surprisingly, it's those elements that I just moved over in ADKAR, right? Desire, knowledge, ability, and reinforcement. So now this is all easy to say, and it's very, very challenging to do. So I need to explain a little bit of difference between a master change narrative, such as I've described, and a story, right? So they are different. They're connected, but they're different. So a narrative is basically a story that's mediated through how a teller presents it. You know, you and I make decisions about what it is that we want to highlight. And just as you see even in politics, you hear, you know, politicians say, well, here's my story. And it's their version of what they want to be able to relay to their audiences, right? And it reflects choices and of either events and priorities that they have to relate what they think is important to their audiences, right? So for the purposes of understanding a corporate narrative, we're making those choices about what we want our stakeholders to understand about why we're going through change and what's in it for them, right? But a narrative really has no end. It has chapters and they evolve over time, but it doesn't have the traditional elements of a story that has a beginning, middle, and an end, right? So we think about a story, it's a series of events that are related by the narrator, right? It has a sequence, right? And there are specific elements in it, the hero, the things I just mentioned, the catalyst, conflict, choice, resolution, and a big, wonderful moral at the end. Sounds familiar, right? All those great things that we've enjoyed. Now let's talk about crisis purposes, crisis communications. The master narrative could be something like, let's just say we pick a headline that says, always on, always prepared. Right? And some details that relay why the ability to communicate instantly during and following a crisis is a mainstay of crisis leadership and response. Well, stories then, in the context of change management, are going to be the proof points for that master narrative. So using that example, right, underneath our master narrative of always on, always prepared, maybe we're going to implement a new AI-driven chatbot technology, right, to answer critical questions about a crisis. And we need to train some stakeholders on how to use that. And last thing a lot of people want these days is more training. But telling a story about how those stakeholders, by taking the training, will become heroes in the quest to be always on, always prepared, is a way of linking a story, right, to the master narrative, or what I call the story. So here's the takeaway. Master narratives are kind of story that make every other action, proof point, or related change initiative make sense. It gives context. Right. So think of it as almost like an organizational chart. The top of the chart is the master narrative. And then reporting to the chart, you have all these stories. Right. They're all proof points that help illustrate and bring context in those initiatives or proof points to the and connected to that master narrative.
Yeah, you've packed so much into that answer. It's really an incredible amount of information. I'm going to pull a little bit out there, I think, just because I think, first of all, the neuroscience is so important. And to me, you know, it goes back. And for those of our regular listeners know, we talk about going to the basement, which is also closely related to the limbic system, back to the triple F, freeze, flight, fight response to threat. And, you know, when you think in sort of evolutionary terms, this is where I think it makes so much sense, is that because we're a social species, hearing stories, understanding stories is essential to the social cohesion that's required for our survival. Mm-hmm. So somewhere way back there in our evolutionary past, we with the hard wiring back there to say stories are this important, and as I say, understanding it so we can work together is integral to our being able to survive and go forward. And that's why I like so much what you talk about being the discipline and the care of creating that master narrative and all the proof points underneath it, because the leader then begins to have things begin to make sense. Mm-hmm. And people can then see themselves in the story and buy in and want to become part of that narrative. So I think it's great how you've tied together both of those aspects of the storytelling tradition and narrative, as well as the neuroscience that underlies so much of our human reaction.
Yeah, and I know I packed a lot in there, but you know, I do think you make some really valid points that this is without that narrative, right? In these independent actions or activities and decisions that we make almost come across as chaotic to employees, right? It's like, well, here comes another training. Why are we doing this? And it's so often that organizations forget to say, well, let me help you understand this. This really gets us to this great future state that we're changing for. It's a reason we're taking this training in the first place.
Yeah, and the big parts of the organization will not have been on those story meetings where that original narrative gets crafted, right? When people figure out where they want to go, and that helping them catch up is so essential.
Yeah, well, and that's also an organizational, it should be an organizational internal comms priorities to make sure that story, that narrative is introduced, that it's cared for, and it's constantly being used and referenced as the organization operates day to day. That's part of what we do, what we should be doing.
Let's hope so. Again, I think that's something to get taken for granted. I think people have announced what's going to happen and they go off and they forget to care for the narrative, as you put it, which I think is terrific.
Now,
one of the things about bringing employees through change, particularly in crisis situations, as you began to talk about there, is giving people hope and confidence in the future. Are there some particular techniques or approaches you've used to make sure that people see that future as something they hopefully want to aspire to and not be afraid of?
Yeah, you've really hit on an important trend that a lot of us who do employee communications are also engaging in. And that is, we're living in a perma-crisis world, as you know, Eric. And so being aware of that has shaped a lot of our thinking in terms of what we can do and provide for our organizations and what we can do to support our leaders. So there's a couple things. One is to double down on values, right, as your, pardon the pun, North Star. Right. It's when who you are is tested and employees are watching. Right. So during a crisis, if you're in the process of, you know, really navigating some tough times, it's an opportunity to walk the talk and show that values are not just words on a page, but that they're being used to guide your decisions, right? They're being used to inform and sublevel your strategy. And often it's an opportunity missed. So I think doubling down on values is a really strong way of showing employees that you've got the North Star in place to guide your actions. I think secondly, it's about giving context and perspective, right? And that means looking into your history. Not that a lot of organizations like doing that, but the reality is most successful organizations that have been around for a while have had significant crises of various natures in their pasts. And they've had to reinvent themselves to stay relevant, and they can do it again. So I think giving employees a sense of we've been down to a tough road before, we've navigated it. Did we do it perfectly? Perhaps not, but we sort of learn from it. And our ability to stay true to who we are, our ability to stay true to our values, and our ability to come up with strategic solutions to keep relevance in the marketplace is something that we've not lost. And so I think that's another way of showing we've done this before and we'll do it again. And I think that the last thing that I would actually two things more. One is to communicate early and often, as I mentioned. And while you're doing that, by the way, that's not just a job for the CEO, right? That is something that every leader, every people leader in an organization needs to be empowered to do, right? So think about not just the senior executive group and what and who they need to be talking to, but every people leader in your organization is a resource that's quite frankly looking for help. You know, how do I help navigate this particular situation with my own team, my portion of the organization? Give me some insights or give me context so that I can use. Give me some words, give me some messaging that I can use to help convince my teams that like we're going to make our way through this. And we give them that hope that you're talking about. And I think finally, like, let's build resiliency as an organizational muscle, right? Change management, I'm going to go back to that. It's no longer a nice to have or once in a millennia skill set. This is one constant that we can count on today, and that is change. So as a result, change management, that discipline we were talking about, Eric, it's an everyday must-have capability. And I think leaders who are not investing in this and not developing this will not be as relevant in the very near future because they don't have this ability to build resiliency as an organizational muscle. And we do that by understanding and implementing change management.
You know, I love that idea of building resilience in and also of spreading out the work to every people leader because it is, if it comes from one source, you've got to you can only get so far, right? You need to be able to amplify and spread that message. And I think back to one of the interviews I did many years ago now for a story that on Herman Miller, where they have a group they call their water carriers, mm-hmm. who are people who've been in the organization at least 20 years, and part of their job is to tell stories.
Tell
the story of innovation, of resilience, of changes that have happened in the organization. The part of that, we've done it before. We've been there before. That story, that notion that you're talking about is so true in that. And I've never seen anybody else replicate that practice where they made people, this is part of it, is carrying the culture forward and being able to be that communicator who isn't necessarily at the top of the pyramid, but knows deeply what the organization's all about and can help translate and can help amplify the key messages in a really authentic way.
Most organizations, when they identify leadership competencies, have communications listed right there, right? But within that, there isn't usually the specificity of saying, being able to tell a story and to tell it well is actually a very empowering tool for you. So let's work on developing that skill set. So we're talking about kind of a sub-level skill set that is critical for leaders to have to be able to tell stories, to make their content engaging for the people that they lead. And you're right. I think, too often we rely on one person, right, the CEO or some very senior level executive, to tell the story when research shows over and over and over, almost in every organizational health study, that employees, if they have a preference for where they get their information and insight about the company from, it's their leader, their direct leader, not necessarily the CEO. So it could be my manager, my supervisor, my director or vice president. So that's why we talk about the importance of having all people leaders empowered to champion the change and to champion that narrative.
Now, I know this was hard, traditionally hard. Now we're into this new world of work where we've got people working either remotely or in some sort of hybrid environment, and they aren't together as much as they once were. we've got technology like Zoom and other platforms as intermediaries, and we're doing more on video and other using other channels. And we've got greater emphasis on things like diversity and inclusion and being able to meet people where they are and understand mm-hmm. people as individuals. So are there any particularly innovative efforts you've seen in Change Communications that address the sort of new world of work and that you may have seen and admired? Are there new techniques to pick up, or is it still a matter of just getting the basics right and finding new ways to execute them?
Well, I think you ask a really great question. And part of this is understanding the impact of remote work on culture, right? And culture is shifting dramatically in a way that I think a lot of organizations are not paying attention to. So to your point, the norms of what we established when we went to the water cooler, because we were all going to the office, you know, for years and years and had those norms in place, they're no longer there. And we have people starting organizations, you know, as new employees who've never had that brick and mortar kind of experience. And as a result, companies' cultures are beginning to shift. Behaviors are starting to change. Values are starting to change. So organizations, as they're paying, kind of doubling down on the values piece, as I mentioned earlier, for crises, but also just for general evolution of companies as they work and navigate through the return to work or remote work, they have to spend more time and attention giving it care and feeding. And that means they've got to be mindful about behaviors, about supporting leaders and giving them tips and tools to make sure that they're bringing their teams together and they have those human experiences that we all had because we all used to go to the office together. I think they're also looking for ways of ensuring that employees enjoy a greater sense of well-being. I think if you ask any CHRO today, what are their top two or three priorities, most of them are going to tell you employee well-being is absolutely right there. And it's because we're not having those social interactions that we used to have. And employees, whether it's depression or anger or frustration or disconnection or disengagement, remote working is in some way contributing to that. So finding ways of bringing employees together in brick and mortar in real life experiences as a way of supplementing the work that they're doing remotely, right? Which is, we all know it's very efficient and preferable by a lot of folks' standards. that's great, but we need to find ways of bringing them together and giving them recognition in ways that we used to do it when we were in brick and mortar. So there's a lot of smaller tools and techniques that organizations are deploying, but it is clearly a focus area.
Well, absolutely. And yet another area to have some discipline and some intentionality around making sure you bring people together to make those connections and not just leave it to chance. Mm-hmm. Now, another giant leap into the future. Many organizations are beginning to embrace AI for their communications. Where do you see the opportunities? Where are the potential missteps? And particularly around communicating around change, if you get it wrong, it could be not good, not a good outcome. So how do we best use AI? Where's the upside? Where's the downside?
I love this question because I'm spending a lot of time doing research right now on AI, but specifically from a communications vantage point. Last year, I did a study of a couple hundred communicators, a survey to understand what were you thinking about it? What are the things, how are you going to use it? How are you using it? And what are the things that hold you back from it? And I also created a landscape white paper on it. I'm doing the same thing this year. It'll be out next month, so I'm looking forward to make sure I share that with you. But the reality is the opportunities are moving beyond productivity, right? And looking at the more strategic uses of artificial intelligence to do things like predictive analytics through machine learning. So I actually just hired through Upwork a machine learning engineer out of Cairo, because I had to educate myself on what is this and how does it work and how in the world would a communicator kind of work with this. So it's fascinating to understand the ins and outs and the specifics of what predictive analytics can be. But I think that's when I think about opportunity. Everybody's using it now for productivity, right? Because that's the most tactical and easiest thing to do. Use this app and it'll, you know, draft something for you or research something for you. But I think the real power is looking at, let's take that next step into the more strategic uses And how do we train machines, train computers to take the data that we have or that we're collecting and help us predict a better outcome based off of what the data tells us so we can inform our strategy? So I'm actually very excited about that. I think the missteps, that we've seen happen is not challenging generative AI, right? Is it right? Is it fair? A lot of these learning models have bias built into the learning models. And so we can't just accept a lot of things that come out of ChatGPT or anything else as being accurate or being authentic. So, there was a cautionary tale in February of last year. You probably remember when the Michigan State University campus shootings happened, and the Peabody College at Vanderbilt, kind of in an effort to assure their students that they were paying attention and looking at the safety and security of students, had a message that was sent off to the student population, and it was generated by ChatGPT. And the problem was, it was really, really off tone, and it included kind of a little teaser at the end that says it was generated by ChatGPT. So it drew a lot of criticism. And, it basically said we can't rely on ChatGPT or any generative AI to get it right when it comes to the human tone. So there's a cautionary tale there that we all can learn from. But I think the last thing is probably the most important. And Eric, you and I have been talking now about both generative AI, and we've been talking about change management. And these are not mutually exclusive. In fact, I would argue they're probably the two most important new competencies that are developing, I'll say from a communicator's point of view, but I think also for crisis response. AI is changing the way that we work. There's no question that that will continue. And the pace and the volume of change that's coming at us, I think, is unprecedented. And what's happening is we're coming up with policies, perhaps, that say, you can use this form of AI, but not this one, or can you use it under these circumstances? But what we're not doing is saying, let's take a disciplined approach like we would for any change management and make sure that we're being thorough and thoughtful about how this change is being implemented in our organizations. So I when I talk to employee communicators, and I'm talking a lot of them these days, I'm saying, if you want to know what the number one and number two new competency that you need to be developing within 12 months, these are the two. It's change management and it's generative AI or AI as a competency. So that's my view of the world on AI.
No, that's good, and you're right. You've once again hit on so many points in a short answer that AI it can be great for generating information. It is not necessarily great at authentic tone and expressing empathy, and it can make what the machine doesn't see as missteps, but anybody who's from an institution, again, particularly if you're talking internal communications, where we know the culture, we know each other, we know the typical tone, we know how people how people speak and phrase things, and if it gets something off, and again, that inauthenticity in a really critical message can just turn your listeners off and really set you back, which is very, very tough. Now, I have seen, and I'm not going to plug the company here, but there is a company that's beginning to do through some fairly quick pulse surveys throughout the year, be able to get the temperature of people and sort of know on an individual basis how people are feeling about their jobs and what's going on. And maybe now opens the opportunity, perhaps some tailored messaging these folks are okay with a broadcast message, but here's a few who might need a one-on-one to answer questions and allow us to get much more granular in terms of understanding what people are understanding and not just what we're pushing out at them.
Right. Yep. Right. We live in an age of hyper-personalization, right? So from a marketing and social and digital marketing, we're getting stuff every day that's, knows something about us that we didn't know that it knew. And I think the expectations increasingly inside organizations is that I'm going to get information and communication that's more directly relevant to who I am, what my job is, and where I work. And to your point, we were talking about predictive analytics, and IBM Watson basically has the ability to predict with 95% accuracy which employees are most likely to leave voluntarily, right? It's voluntary attrition. And that's pretty amazing based off of, where they work, what their commute is, what kind of job, what kind of, to your point, health pulse scores that they're seeing in that area or that in that team. So yes, there's a lot of stuff happening there, and I think the more we learn about it and learn about it responsibly. I want to make sure I understand that. Because you know, there's a lot of ethical decisions that are also very quickly emerging. I'm in the process of putting some training together that looks at issues like ethics in AI for communications. And you know, we know that there are software packages out there that monitor what employees are writing and sending for tone and for you know who's receiving those. And so it begins to raise all kinds of new issues that employees may not have been thinking about before, but could create some real tension inside organizations, right? For on security and privacy. So we've got a lot of work to do here. It's not just, oh, AI isn't that interesting and cool. It's like, no, it's happening. And we've got to be thinking more broadly about the implication of it on our workforce.
No, absolutely. So a lot of work to be done ahead, a lot of potential, a lot of potential pitfalls. So my final question for you is the one I ask all of my guests. What gives you hope?
Well, I'm going to say thank you for asking that question, Eric, because you're showing that while business and leadership and crisis response is what brings us together, the thing that we will always have in common is being human. And I just think we need a lot more of that. So to answer your question, I think hope comes to me through acts of kindness. And sometimes small things is maybe a door being held open or a thank you, manners. I saw something this week. Country musician Zach Bryan was in Milwaukee. And he walked off stage and gave a guitar to a young woman in a wheelchair. And to see the pure joy on her face, it literally brought a tear to my eyes. When I think about volunteers going to war-torn parts of the earth to be heroes and putting themselves at risk to help others, man, that's the stuff that gives me hope. We're so often in hurries and putting what we want before anything else, and we put our politics before being human. When I see or experience acts of basic human kindness, I have hope for what's in front of us. And I think we as a nation and as a global community, we need that now more than ever. So thank you for asking that question.
Well, and thank you for answering it in such a beautiful way. It is those small acts of kindness remind us, as you say, that we are all human and we're all here to help each other. We're all here to make life a little bit better. Thank you so much for this conversation.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
My guest for this episode has been Mark Dollins. He's the co-author of Engaging Employees Through Strategic Communications, Skills, Strategies, and Tactics. It's a really fabulous book. I urge you to pick it up. We're discussing change communications and how to lead people through in a positive way. You can do it. And until next time, remember, you're it. Be ready to lead when it matters most. This has been another episode of Leader ReadyCast from the National Preparedness Leadership Initiative. Subscribe to Leader ReadyCast wherever you get your favorite podcasts and find out more about us at npli.sph.harvard.edu. Follow us on Twitter @HarvardNPLI. Thanks for listening and be ready to lead.